This podcast is brought to you by GE. Imagination at work.
I said, hey, I have this great idea. Can I work in your lab? Oh, and by the way, I'm 10.
Clearly way beyond what ordinary humans can do today.
The genie is just the one in a million.
She was 18 months. And I'm like, oh, that's all there is to potty training. Well, look at that.
The mind of the genius is always working.
You know you can wield this power to go after any problem.
So rare, that's a big mystery I want to solve.
Who can achieve and perform something at adult level?
I developed the technology. You know, I didn't even have a high school diploma at the time.
I'm Lily Cerna, and this is Decoding Genius, a podcast series where we ask, what is a genius? How does a person become one? As a mathematician, I'll be embarking on a journey around the world in pursuit of answers to some of these impossibly big questions. Along the way, we'll meet six truly remarkable people, geniuses who have already begun to change our world. We'll start by asking, is genius born or bred? And take you on a journey of a teenager who, after a singular moment of inspiration, is now using science to attack one of the biggest problems facing oil-producing countries. For GE, this is Decoding Genius. Kelsey Miller Anderson is a 22-year-old genius. At the age of 15, she discovered something that is changing the world of soil remediation. To put it simply, she designed an amazing way to make ruined, polluted, unusable soil usable again. So how did a curious teen make this incredible and potentially billion-dollar discovery? It was simple. She saw a single dandelion in the alley behind her parents' house in Calgary, Canada. Hi.
Hi. Welcome to Calgary.
Thank you so much.
My name's Lily.
The science behind what Kelsey has discovered is off the charts. It's something that no one in the industry has ever tried before. But because of this, it brings up dozens of questions about Kelsey. For starters, why her? How could a teenager come up with an idea that has eluded some of the best scientists in the world for decades?
It all kind of started in the summer between grade 9 and 10. I'd seen a dandelion growing in the pavement in the alley behind our house, and I'd never really stopped to think before, well, why do we see dandelions everywhere, and why do they grow places that other plants can't?
Kelsey's thought process went something like this. If a weed can grow in a crack in the asphalt, which is full of toxic hydrocarbons, maybe we can harness that ability and make soil that's polluted by the oil industry good for growing plants as well. That's her genius in a nutshell. Most of us see a weed in the driveway and think, how could I kill it? But Kelsey sees the same thing and asks, why is it living? Do you think if you hadn't stopped to think about it that day that you wouldn't have gone down this journey?
Probably not. Everybody thinks that those aha moments are a really remarkable thing, that they're really theatric and that there's so much behind them. But most of the great discoveries come from these little everyday observations and just from somebody taking the time to think about it a little deeper, a little differently.
According to Kelsey's mum, she has always been ahead of the curve.
I don't know if she wants me to tell this story, but it's about potty training. But that most kids, it takes, you know, some teaching to do that. And my mom had brought everything over. And I'm like, oh, she's far too young. Like, she was, I don't know, not younger than 18 months. And then everything was here. And then one night, Brian and I are in bed, and I can hear all this noise. And sure enough, I get up, it's her. She's, you know, done whatever she's supposed to do, put it in the toilet, flushed it, washed her hands, and put herself back to bed. And I'm like, oh, that's all there is to potty training. Well, look at that.
So you didn't, did you go to
her? No, nothing. She just sort of knew all on her own. Everybody else did it, so I guess I need to do it too.
That is remarkable. After mastering toilet training, Kelsey moved on to public school. And in the third grade, her school did something truly wonderful for her. It closed.
It was turned into a charter school, so they have a bit more freedom in the way that they teach. So this school in particular was inquiry-based.
Inquiry-based learning is basically when students come up with the questions and teachers supervise as they search for the answers themselves.
So it was a lot of hands-on learning. They really gave you a lot of freedom as to how you learned. It wasn't just learning from books. I don't think in all my 4 to 9, in all those grades, we really ever used textbooks or anything like that. It was all sort of project-based or group projects, things like that.
Kelsey's schooling didn't end at the dismissal bell like most students. Her parents' kitchen quickly became her personal lab.
This whole area would be covered in, the first year was plants, wasn't too bad, not too smelly. The next year she did biofuels from algae, very smelly, and we'd have to do it over, it was over Christmas, and we would have the whole house full of guests for Christmas, and this whole thing would be set up as a lab.
Kelsey had the right learning environment and really supportive parents. But then the teenage years arrived, and it wasn't such smooth sailing.
When I was coming out of the 8th grade, I'd always done science fair, and I had had a bit of a bad experience with a teacher who wasn't very supportive of, you know, my project. It kind of put it down a little bit. When I got to grade 9, I actually partnered up with one of my friends, and we did a project. The teacher, he saw the project, and he said, "No, this is really good. Why don't you guys go to the school fair?" And we ended up winning the school fair, and he said, "Well, now you have to go to the city fair." And we actually ended up going on to the National Science Fair, and we won a bronze medal there. So, I mean, if it wouldn't have been for him, I don't think I would have done science fair the next year. And the next year is when I actually discovered the dandelion and sort of found my passion for remediation. And I don't think I would have ever done what I've done if it wasn't for him.
So there you have it. Becoming a genius is a simple 3-step process. Close the local school, find a pushy teacher, then go for a walk in the alley looking for weeds. I mean, how hard could it be? You might assume that all young geniuses eventually find their calling like Kelsey did. But actually, a lot of them don't. At least not without some outside help.
Hello, here they are.
Awesome.
Good to see you.
So
hi, Nippy, good to see you.
My next stop is Scottsdale, Arizona, where Otto Siegel and Susanna Lange provide that outside help to geniuses.
So welcome to Arizona. Welcome to Genius Coaching.
Thank you so much, Otto.
You're the coding genius here every day.
Otto and Susanna are passionate advocates for the genius in all of us. They believe that most of us aren't recognized as geniuses because we're being measured against the wrong criteria.
When you go to school, you are supposed to learn certain common standards, like you have multiple choice tests, and everyone is supposed to learn those things that's put out in a curriculum at school. So if you, as a child, are not good in learning those things, you think you measure yourself how good you are with what society puts out for you, how you should be. And then you are always thinking, but I can't do what I should do, then your genius, you will never even think about developing your genius because you always think about, hey, but I should be good at that, I should be good at that.
What does this unique genius look like?
Genius is for me a 5-pack. So it's intelligence, it's also intensity. If these children want something, they want to have it now, not tomorrow. And parents people get upset about this instead of seeing it as part of this expression of the child to be alive, full speed, 100%, no compromising. Number 3, of course, is sensitivity. That means the senses are wide open to feed this hungry brain with meaningful information. The more we support that, the more genius can unfold and come out as natural power as it is. It's meant to be. And then we have specialty. Everybody is unique. That's why expression of genius is so different. We cannot measure ourselves, compare ourselves with Bill Gates or Steve Jobs. It's useless. Competition among geniuses doesn't make sense. And the last and number 5 is charisma or passion. If there's not a passion behind it, intelligence is useless.
I'm a professional mathematician, and I've never had anyone qualify how my brain works. Otto kindly offers to do it for me. He starts with a giant whiteboard and a bunch of colored markers.
I want you to draw something both hands at the same time.
Okay.
The markers don't leave the wall. Go.
Okay, I'm going to draw circles because it seems like that's the easiest thing. So I've got 2 circles.
Okay, you surprised me already. Again, draw something with both hands simultaneously, eyes closed this time.
With my eyes closed, I continue to draw circles with both hands.
I want to go much longer. Eyes closed. This time as big as you can, as fast as you can.
Okay, so...
Ready?
I'm drawing...
No, more.
Longer. Okay, so I'm going to...
10 seconds at least, 12 seconds, all right. 15 seconds.
So I'm swirling the pins in my hands.
Spice it up a little bit.
And I'm going around.
Otto said that I'm risk averse. Apparently, I like to repeat things that I know I can do well. I guess that's not a bad trait for a mathematician, but Otto says that it's limiting.
But you played it very safe. The brain is open, everything flows, but it's limited.
because you repeat the same pattern. What we do now with you is the next step, imagination training.
Okay.
Okay? You make up stuff as you go. And it's so important for these bright kids to learn that. They're not caught in the intelligence, being in the limited IQ prison, I call it. No, venture out. Creativity requires imagination. That's how it starts.
In just one afternoon, Otto and Susanna made me rethink the way I think. It's a good reminder that even a genius needs coaching, motivation, and encouragement. I've also seen firsthand just how incredibly passionate Otto is about helping people reach their potential.
To find resonance for their unique genius. Because that's my deepest desire. The genius is heard. The genius is understood. And it's magnified and people can benefit in masses from genius. Otherwise, it's lost. And I care about bringing that out to people. That's why I do what I do. I'm born to do this. I couldn't do anything else.
What kind of tea would you like?
Surprise me, whatever you're having.
Is Earl Grey okay?
Perfect. Yeah, perfect.
Getting back to Kelsey, even though she was born with a brilliant and curious mind, it hasn't always been easy.
I'm also a woman in science, and often you find yourself very much outnumbered, but it sounds like you were outnumbered in so many different ways. Did you feel isolated at all?
You know, honestly, when I was going through high school, not a lot of people knew about what I was doing. So I would say, I guess a little bit, because I kind of kept that part a little bit hidden.
Why?
You know, I think back now, and I was always a little worried, I think, about how my friends or how, you know, all the kids in high school would think of me, or would they think of me differently if, you know, I was all of a sudden, you know, working at a university and doing all this research. So I did kind of, I think until about the end of my grade 12 year, and as I got into university, I was pretty quiet about what I was doing.
Unfortunately, being socially awkward or feeling like an outsider is not uncommon for a genius. Professor Mirica Gross is a world-renowned expert on gifted children and has led a study on the top 0.03% of Australian children in terms of intelligence. She separates them into three groups: the gifted, the talented, and the geniuses.
A gifted child is a child whose ability is in the top 10% of the population. And you can be gifted in any area, any domain, any field. But giftedness is potential, a promise. When the child's potential is translated into performance, we call it talent. So a talented child is someone who is the top 10% of performance in a particular field. The genius is the child who can achieve and perform something at adult level. The genius has a creative touch that enables them to bring a new way of looking at things to something they're involved with. Michelangelo, he wasn't just gifted. The man just saw things in a different way.
About 1 in 10,000 of the population is gifted, but only 1 in 100,000 can be described as a genius. So what is the real difference?
I could tell you the ingredients. One is the type of mind that explores and investigates and questions all the time. The other is a certain degree of motivation that gifted kids tend to be born with. They want, when they're very, very young, to keep learning. They want to keep exploring. You know, the joy in the young child's eyes when, her mind opens and she of course, racing after the thing that she's thinking about.
Professor Gross stresses that without the right education and support, even the most highly gifted child won't be successful.
To be a genius, you have to have learned a different way of looking at things. And that is partly inherent in yourself. You have to have the potential to look at things in a different way. But that can be killed off by a family that doesn't encourage it. It can be killed off even more readily by a school that doesn't encourage it, or by a classroom situation where the other children laugh at the gifted child and mock her, so that she learns, for safety, the best thing she can do is to camouflage the fact that she's different. If we turn that child's gift, the ability, into the talent, the achievement, Can you think what a force of talent we're developing for our country?
That's why identifying exceptionally bright children earlier on in life is so important.
You're not going to find a genius, and you're not going to find even moderately gifted kids unless you've got your eyes open for them. I was a teacher for so many years. If I would see something in class and a child would turn my sentence around and give the answer back by almost just repeating what I'd said. And I remember one kid doing this for 2 or 3 days until I started thinking, what's he trying to tell me? And I realised he was indeed a very bright kid. And he had been sitting there bored for some time till I realised what the clever little dear was doing. Sometimes a good strategy for teachers is to tell a joke that's a little bit above the level of the class. Look who laughs. The kid who laughs is probably the kid who has got the joke. And we even give you a little eye meet. You know, I got that. Do you realise I got that?
It's interesting.
At this point, I should probably explain a little bit more about what it is exactly that Kelsey is doing. What she's done is repurposed the natural chemical process that lets some weeds grow in harsh hydrocarbon-filled ground. You see, dandelions, like the one that she saw in the alley, have a secret friend, a fungus that live in the roots and make the soil near them suitable for growing in.
So essentially, if you can envision a roll of sod, how they essentially roll that out onto the soil, our technology works in a very similar way. You would have our mycomats and you would roll them out over the soil and essentially you just leave them there. And the mycelium, which is the vegetative part of the fungi, starts to branch into the soil and that's what's going to do the remediation. In just 21 days, you could see an elimination of the hydrocarbons. So we're in the range, I think, of 98% faster, 80% cheaper. So a lot of the current solutions or the things that they're doing actually just involve sort of digging up all the contaminants and putting them in a landfill. So they're not actually really doing anything. They're just displacing it. So with our method, it actually completely transforms the contaminants into less harmful molecules.
Kelsey is now ready to put her process into action, into a business. But as we've seen throughout this journey, even geniuses need help.
I didn't really have the right set of business skills to start a business. So I started looking for a co-founder who'd be able to fill some of those gaps that I had. I met the perfect person. So I met Aaliyah and we're pretty much the exact same person. And she's just as passionate about solving environmental issues as I am.
Aaliyah Dosser is a 22-year-old with her own set of exceptional skills.
Aaliyah. Hi.
Oh, hi.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Instead of biology and chemistry, Aaliyah excels at dollars and cents. She's currently pounding the pavement in Toronto looking for investors for their brand new company, MycoRemedy.
What is it about Kelsey that really sparked your interest?
Her insatiable curiosity, honestly. Just the story of how this all started. She's not afraid to ask really important questions and get to the bottom of things, and that always inspired me.
Is she, in your opinion, is she a genius?
I think she is. She just, again, it comes back to that curiosity. Like, I actually like to categorize people into three groups. So there's people who will just walk, walk through their day, not really, like, take notice of anything, and then you'll have people who will stop, they'll notice something, they'll appreciate it, and then they'll continue. And there's people like Kelsey who will stop, they'll notice it, and then they'll investigate until they find the answers that they're looking for. And so I think she falls into that bucket. If we want to call it genius, then it's genius, and I wouldn't hesitate to call Kelsey a genius.
Where is this company going financially?
I was actually just with a friend talking about, we both are very inherently environmentally and socially driven. And so when we were speaking earlier about the negative connotation of for-profit work, sometimes that can, it's kind of a tension between the two. But he was mentioning that, you know, do you want to be a $1 million company or do you want to be a $1 billion company? And I said, I just want to have an impact. I want to make the world a better place and make sure that we're doing it in a financially sustainable way. And he said, Aaliyah, the bigger the number, the more value you're providing. And I know that MycoRemedy can provide a whole lot of value. And so that's where we're heading.
So which one is it? Million or billion?
Billion.
It was clear from the day she potty trained herself at 18 months that Kelsey was exceptional. But that didn't guarantee success. She also needed a public school closing in third grade, parents that allowed fungus experiments on the kitchen table are now a kindred spirit that understands business. As an outsider looking in, I'm amazed it actually happened. But to Kelsey, it's as obvious as the trees she sees outside of the kitchen window.
For me, I think that most of the solutions to some of our world's most pressing problems are going to come from nature. And so I kind of think this environment, which luckily is my backyard, is really where a lot of that research is going to take place and a lot of where those solutions are going to be born.
Geniuses are known to think differently. That's actually one of the definitions of genius. And that extends to the way that Kelsey sees the idea of getting a university degree.
So I've actually decided just this fall that I'm going to put my degree on a little bit of a hiatus, simply because things are moving so fast in this industry and things are always changing. And, you know, I've been sitting on this technology and this research for a while, and the time for this is really now. And
yeah,
so.
And I guess in other industries, say like the tech industry, it's generally more acceptable where people go towards their goal from a very young age.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at sort of the startup culture, especially with like Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg, a lot of them did drop out of university and they don't have degrees. And in sort of the tech side of things and that startup community, that's the new norm. You know, it's almost like, well, why did you have to go to university? Why didn't you start doing this sooner? Didn't you have the idea? Didn't you have the skills? Whereas in sort of the hard sciences like I'm in, I think I'm kind of a bit of an exception. You know, it's not the norm for somebody to stop university and pursue an idea like this.
Do people question your, I guess, your expertise, your authority in this area in any way?
I think a lot of people have this idea that a technology or a solution like this must have come from somebody with, you know, more knowledge, more expertise, more experience, and usually definitely a university degree. But I mean, the truth of it is that I started doing the research and developed the technology when I was only 15, and I mean, I didn't even have a high school diploma at the time. So it seems really crazy to me that they have this idea that you do need a degree. And I think just about anything you can teach yourself if you're passionate about it. And especially in a field like this, a lot of it isn't really known anyway. So I'm not sure how much they could teach me in school.
What would a piece of advice you'd have for, say, a kid, a 15-year-old kid who has an idea and wants to pursue it?
It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter if you've gone to school, like what sort of background you have. The thing that is unique about each of us is that we all have this unique perspective. And that's really what allows you to innovate. It's your ability to look at a dandelion or look at something in a different way than everybody else. And that's where those creative ideas are born. So I would say to the 15-year-olds that, you know, if somebody says you're too young to do it, just ignore them because you probably have some pretty good ideas.
Thank you so much, Kelsey, for inviting us into your world. I think you're a remarkable person and are really believing in a change of the world.
Thank you. Thanks so much for coming all the way from Australia. I hope it wasn't too cold.
As I'm walking away from Kelsey's office in the forest, I'm struck by how unlikely it all is. There were so many steps along the way that led her to this point. So many people that motivated and facilitated her work that it almost seems impossible that it could all happen. But it is happening. Against all odds, this singular genius has pushed her way towards the sunlight, just like that dandelion in the alley. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode. I want to thank all of our experts who have joined us along the way. Otto Siegel, Susanna Lange, Merica Gross, and of course, it was an amazing experience to spend time with Kelsey Miller-Anderson in Canada, along with her family and friends. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or your favourite podcatcher app. Share our journey with your friends and be sure to check out further details at decodinggenius.com.au. Our journey continues on our next episode with an investigation into inspiration. Where do geniuses get their ideas from? And can you learn to be on the lookout for your own personal spark?
Suddenly, you know, all the lights come on and then you run out into the hall and go, "Everybody, I figured it out."
Until next time, I'm Lily Cerner. Thanks for joining us on Decoding Genius.
This podcast was brought to you by GE.
Imagination at work.